Hey everyone, David here. The wait is over, Severance is back. The Lorehounds are teaming up with Properly Howard to bring you comprehensive coverage of Season 2. Join John, Anthony, Steve, and myself each week as we dive into this amazing show. Here's what you need to know. We've set up a dedicated feed for our Severance coverage. To join us, just search for Severance Lorehounds in your podcast player, or click the feed link in our link tree. You'll find that in the show notes below. If you're already a Patreon or Supercast subscriber, don't worry. You'll get the ad-free versions automatically in your regular feed. Plus, exclusive access to our upcoming bonus episodes that we'll be announcing soon. The early reviews are incredible. Apple's marketing push is huge, and we cannot wait to explore this season with you. And unlike the music dance experience, you don't need Mr. Milchick's permission to join us. Don't forget, you can find the feed link in our link tree in the show notes, or just search Severance Lorehounds wherever you get your podcasts. Join us for what's shaping up to be an incredible season.
And remember, your outie will thank your innie for subscribing.
Hello, welcome back to Wool Shift Dust, a Silo TV podcast. This is an extra season 2 edition. I do have the episode with Luke and I to talk through all of your feedback that you've been sending in and wrap up the season. We are going to be recording that shortly, but in the meantime, I have an extra something to tide you over. I was able to sit down with Sal Calleros, who is a member of the Silo Writers Room and also a listener to this podcast. So we were able to really get into some of the questions that Luke and I have brought up during this season and get just some insight overall into the Writers Room process and being a TV writer and all those interesting things. Just two kind of minor spoiler policy points going in, aside from the fact that, you know, the usual spoiler policy for this podcast applies, which means we're going to be talking about anything that's aired through the season 2 finale, so definitely make sure you're caught up there. And anything that is in the associated part of the books is fair game. And these two spoiler points are actually, they fall under that policy. They are things from the books that have already played out differently on screen, so we're free to discuss them. Just a minor point for if anyone is planning to read the books right now, they will be somewhat spoilers for that, one a larger spoiler than the other, just to continue being vague and non-spoilery about it to set your expectations. One is about, I skirted around in the finale discussion that one of the characters, a couple characters who died in the books do not die in the season finale. And we're going to straight up talk about one of those changes. Now, not a spoiler for the future of the show because that character's around and now that character's story is just on a different path and they could last till the end of the series now for all I know. Another point has to do with Lucas's story. You know, I've teased that there are elements that are missing. Now, there's one element that we've already passed by in the book term, so it's just not going to be happening in the TV show version. So we talk about directly in this episode what that is. Other than that, you are perfectly safe, spoiler-free zone, as usual, beyond those caveats. So, without further ado, let's get into it. Okay, so I am here with Sal Calleros, who is a member of the writing team on Silo. Welcome, Sal. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
And I know you're in the LA area. We were just talking about the fires there. So just, of course, I know everyone all over the world is thinking about that and wishing everyone the best possible path to recovery.
Yeah, thank you so much for saying that. It's definitely affected disproportionately members of the entertainment community. So thank you for saying that.
Yeah. For listeners, I just want to provide one note of clarity is that we do know that season 3 and 4 are already written and season 3 right. is well into production,
yes.
but you can't talk about any of that, obviously.
That's so, right. Yes. Yes.
That's not what we're here to discuss. This is an episode about looking back on the season we just completed and right. the show as a whole.
Yeah. Fantastic. That's great.
You actually shared on Blue Sky a great interview between Graham Yost and The Wrap that he gave some details. So I'll link that in the show notes for anyone who wants some teases for season 3.
Yeah, he gave some good little teasers there, and I'll try to follow his lead as far as what he sort of kind of teased and revealed.
Put out there.
But yeah, but not go beyond beyond any of that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, congratulations on a fantastic season of Silo. You were a member of the writing team. We're going to talk about what that means in a minute. You were credited for episode 4, The Harmonium, which is the one where Meadows died.
Yeah.
Which I have to say was personally one of my favorites.
Oh, thank you for saying that. Thank you for saying that. It was fun to write, for sure.
Meadows was one of my favorite characters, but I still forgave you for, for what had to happen.
Killing her off. Yeah. She actually, I'm very surprised at how loved she became. A lot of other of folks that I listen to and Reddit boards I look at, she really landed as a character, which I'm happy to hear.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, it's nice to see a character who speaks their mind, particularly a woman, I suppose, from my perspective. But
definitely.
She, you know, she thought for herself and she said what she thought.
Yes, that definitely was her.
But so let's talk a bit about what it means to be credited for an episode, because, you know, Silo, like most shows, has a writer's room.
Right.
It was a Zoom writer's room, right?
Right. Yes. It was all on Zoom.
Because you guys got started around the pandemic and then the writer's strike was in there.
Yeah. The pre-room was in person. And I think that included Hugh Howie was in that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then once it got the ball rolling, they moved to Zoom, and it started to just stay there, mainly because of the pandemic. Yeah. And because eventually we got writers that were honestly in different continents mm-hmm. and different parts of the country, it just became a lot easier to just stay on Zoom as opposed to being all together.
Right. And when you're writing an episode like The Harmonium, that obviously is something that you are doing as part of the larger team. So how do you negotiate that? Like, what is where you put your head down and do the work, and what's where you're guided to?
Yeah. So just real quick to explain, like at the beginning of the season, let's say season 2, which just ended, we try to map out all 10 episodes, roughly where we want to end, tent poles we want to hit. And slowly we start breaking each episode. And then, for example, when my episode came around, the room and as a group, knowing kind of where we want to go, start kicking around ideas as to, you know, what is exactly going to be the main story of this episode, right? Of course, here, mm-hmm. the big thing here was we meet Solo, right? Like right. He emerges and we really get to know who mm-hmm. he is. And also Meadows and Bernard right. was a huge part of that story. So it's figuring out all of that. And we do sort of like a rough idea, sort of what we call beats on a board, like literally one or two sentences for every scene. And then I go off and create an outline, maybe about 12 pages, that then goes to the room. Everybody discusses it, breaks it apart, puts it back together. And once we're happy with that outline, I go off and write the script. Once the script is done, it gets distributed to the room. And Graham likes to call the room the Wolverines, because what everybody does is they literally will jump in and like,
shred.
If it's not working, shred it apart. Yeah. And then we build it back together until everybody's is happy with the way it's landing. So it's a multi-part process.
Okay. And this is a question from Luke, my co-host, who
yes.
you told me you're a listener. So
I love Luke. He's fantastic. I love anytime he's speaking, I'm like listening, because he's such a fun guy to listen to.
Yeah, no, I have to say I get a big smile on my face when I'm editing. But he was wondering, how do you, for example, in an episode like that, where there were two big storylines in each silo, how do you decide as a writer's room to balance the stories between silos 17 and 18? And now I think we can say that there's going to be that storyline that was teased in the finale too is going to play a role in the next season.
Right. So usually we... once we've broken out sort of like the season and have a rough idea, we can kind of see the some of the folks in the room who've been doing this for a while almost instinctively can be like, that story's going to take about 15 beats, or that story's going to take about 10, right? Mm-hmm. So we kind of know the ending, and then a lot of the room discussion is, how do we get to that end? What are the big emotional moves we need to make? What are the plot points we have to hit? And we color code the board, where, let's say, Meadows is red, Juliet and Solo is green. So at a glance, you could see the balance of how much story is on the board. Obviously, we also have Knox and those stories, and it's all color coded, so you can kind of see the balance of how it's too much red. So we got, I feel like it's got too much, you know, Juliet and Solo, and we use that as sort of a guide to help us. But it's a lot of feeling around. It's a lot of just like in a blind man in a dark room trying to feel it.
Right. So you are a co-executive producer for season two. Congratulations.
Thanks.
But can you talk a little bit about what that means? I mean, producer is one of those titles that can mean a lot of things, but it is often something that's the writing team.
Right. Yeah, so in television, it's a very demarked hierarchy, where the longer you're in this business, the higher you go. Like, you start off as a staff writer and then story editor, executive story editor, and that title honestly just tells you how much experience you have. And often, the more experience you have, it depends on the way the room is run. Often, you are leaned on either to fix other scripts, or you're sent to produce on set. For Silo, because it's filmed in England, I didn't produce any episodes. So being a co-producer, co-executive producer, meant honestly just breaking a lot of story and turning in a good draft of the script that Graham could maybe not do, hopefully not a lot of heavy lifting, because he's got so many different things he's got to juggle. So that's what it kind of means. It means a different thing depending on the show and what the needs are.
Right. Yeah. And how did you get into this career? I mean, this sounds like a dream job for a lot of people, including myself. So what was the path you took to get here?
You know what? I didn't know I was going to do this. I started pretty late, at least for a writer. It wasn't out of college. My first staff job was, I think I was 32. Coming out of college, I thought I was going to go to law school. Quickly found out working at a law office, that was not going to be it. I know I love entertainment. So I looked to get into the entertainment industry, and I ended up working as a research analyst for the FX network. Crunching numbers. I hate math. I'm not good at math, but I'm like, I can run a computer program. And while I was doing that is where I started kind of dabbling a little bit with writing, got a job where I was encouraged to do a little bit more writing. And I ended up writing what's called a spec script, which is basically an episode. Let's say you love Shrinking on Apple. It's almost like fan fiction. You write your own episode, what you would do. So I wrote a spec script of a show called The Shield, which got me into the ABC Disney Fellowship, which is one of the fellowships they have out here in Hollywood, which at that time, if it's a good script, they would take almost anybody. You'd have to go through several rounds, and they bring you on board. And the hope is that you learn enough, once you sort of graduate at the end of the year, you could get an agent, a manager. And honestly, that's what ended up happening for me. I wrote a lot during that fellowship, and coming out of it, I landed an agent and a manager, and I got submitted for television shows, and I ended up my first job on Private Practice, which was the spinoff to Grey's Anatomy. And that sort of got my start.
Right. Okay. Yeah, you've done a lot of different things across the years, a lot of different shows. What shows would you especially recommend to fans of Silo?
You know, actually, I would recommend Sneaky Pete.
Okay, yeah.
Because Shane McRae is in that. And the reason that he actually is in Silo is because we were huge fans of him on that show, especially Graham. Okay. Really loved him. He's the sweetest guy in the world. Great actor. And once Silo came around, it was Graham who decided to bring him on board. And if you watch Graham's shows, he loves to work with folks that he's worked with in the past. But Sneaky Pete is a crime show, but it's also a lot of fun. It's basically a con show, and it has all the sort of hallmarks of a Graham Yost show. Funny, quick dialogue. It feels very Elmore Leonard-ish. That's the one I would recommend if you like Shane McRae, for sure.
Okay. Yeah. You know that there is a Shane McRae fan club in this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so happy that he ended up on the show. He's done so great.
Yeah. And it's just been great in general to see how the characters have been expanded from the books, because Knox is a character in the book, but now, well, I don't know if I can say this, but I'll say this and decide whether or not I'll leave it in. He dies in this part of the book, right?
Right. So. Right. Yeah.
Are you a book reader yourself?
Yeah, I actually am. For this one in particular, the story is I got the call from Graham about possibly joining the show. And I'm like, I don't know what the show's about, but I'm on board if you're doing it. So my exposure to the world of Wool were the scripts for season one. That was the first time I've ever come across this world. Mm-hmm. So I read those first and I'm like, amazing. Mm-hmm. Totally on board. And then I went back and read the books, Wool, Shift, and Dust, in preparation for season two. So all of us in the room have read the books, but we had two writers in particular who were like experts.
The lore experts.
They knew it backwards and forwards. And it was Jeff Wang and Jenny Darmat Strand, who, like, you asked a question and they'd be able to tell you exactly what happened in the book. They were an amazing resource. But yeah, I'm a reader in general. So when this came around, it was so easy to dive in.
Right. And when you guys are breaking episodes, having all read the books, is there ever talk of, you know, intentionally messing with the expectations of book readers?
Not necessarily messing with the expectations of the book readers, but we put a premium on sort of upending tropes that you're used to seeing on television, and upending those, right? Where you think it's going to go this way, we try to go in the opposite direction. It doesn't always work, but ultimately that's what we shoot for. You know, we try to look at the way a story is being told and we're like, well, we've seen that before a dozen times. Is there a different way to tell it? And of course, sometimes that's going to affect the way the book is laid out, but you know, often that's how it works.
Okay. Okay. And so I have a question from my co-host for the spoiler cast, Abby. She is a huge Dr. Nichols fan, and she is absolutely gutted, aren't we all, that he died, and he did not at this point in the book. Can I ask, is there anything you can say about the thinking that went into that? And also just in general, and when you make a big diversion from the book like that.
Right. Well, for sure, as you know, the show loves to kill characters that you love, right?
Right. So does the book, yeah.
And yeah, so does the book. And so a lot of it was actually following the spirit of the book. Mm-hmm. And for Dr. Nichols dying, it sort of fell into that part of it, right? Where, yes, in the book, he continues, but here we definitely wanted somebody to step up and make a big sacrifice. And the most natural person was Juliet's dad, because how screwed up would it be that she is looking to come back? She literally says, I got my dad over there. right?
Right.
And you're no, you don't. Oh my God, no, you don't. And that's exactly the reaction that we're going to. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of writing, you being a writer yourself, is you create characters that you love, you put them up in a tree, you throw rocks at them. You make their lives miserable. and that was one of the reasons going behind it. And you know, we kind of knew that it would hit everyone kind of hard. And also the folks in the world of the story hard. But we also loved that this father who's lost so much, it kind of makes sense, would step up and make the sacrifice. Right.
I mean, it was completely in character for sure.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And, you know, and when you take the totality of everything he's lost, because a lot of it also has to do not necessarily with plot, but with character and character motivation. It just felt right for him to be the one to step up and do that.
Yeah, right. And of course, you listen to Luke, so you might expect this question coming. He was wondering what the discussion in the writer's room was around Walker's agoraphobia.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I did. I did listen to that. It's interesting for the agoraphobia, because I knew he was a little bit bothered by it. And honestly, a lot of the time, and I hate to put it like this, but it's almost like for the expediency of storytelling.
Yeah.
For example, I worked on The Good Doctor, and physicians, nurses also generally don't like medical shows because of the shortcuts that we take.
Right.
Right. And it's like, he wouldn't get over it within an hour. And it's like, well, naturally, but we wouldn't be able to tell the story otherwise. And at the same time, we were telling the story of Solo sort of being a recluse, right? So you kind of don't want to tell the same story twice. So that was in our brains quite a bit. And, you know, and I actually felt kind of bad when Luke was talking about it, because I completely understood what he was going for and what he was talking about. But, you know, often you have goals you shoot for. You know, that's the way that this sort of laid out this time around.
Right. Right. And it is, I mean, it's a team effort too, where everything has to line up and
Yeah. There's a lot of moving parts to the show as well. And, you know, apart from sacrificing characters, sometimes you got to sacrifice certain other things as well.
Yeah. What's one thing that you don't think most people realize about what you do?
Honestly, I don't think folks realize the amount of effort and thinking that goes into writing these shows. Because yes, we're in the Zoom room talking about it, but once the room ends, we're thinking about it also. When you're in the shower, when you're driving, it's just always in your brain, and you're just constantly thinking of the story that you're working on. And a lot of the discussion gets very personal in the writer's room, where we actually open up and talk about our own lives. And when you're talking about character motivation, it's like, oh, well, I went through something similar, loss of a parent, right? Or for example, if you're talking about, I know there's not much like a addiction necessarily in the show, but when you're trying to make an example, you'll use any deep, you know, personal connections to the story that you might have gone through. And from that, you know, you sort of milk as much story and emotion as you can. So a lot of tears get shed in the writer's room talking about these characters and our own personal lives.
Do you have any favorite characters?
Honestly, Jimmy. I mean, the minute that I heard that Steve Zahn was playing him,
perfect.
I was like, wonderful. Wonderful. Because I love him so much. And I would hear his voice in my head as I was writing his character. So when I wrote the whole thing about the circus and the elephants and all that stuff, like his voice was in my head. As a matter of fact, there was a point in the room where I pitched something for season 4 that I kind of pitched it in Jimmy's voice. And everybody in the room kind of laughed. And, you know, so his is the most distinct voice, I think, of all the characters in the show. So he's one that I personally love.
Right. Yeah, I mean, as soon as we do all this fun fan casting, you know, on the pod and in on Discord and things like that, but every time a casting comes out, I'm like, oh no, that's better than what I thought of. Yeah,
yeah, no, it's true. They do such a great job of casting the show. I mean, like from Tim Robbins and Rebecca and Shane McRae, you know, all these folks coming on board, and again, a lot of them come from the sort of Graham Yost world. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them show up knowing like a lot of the good writing that they're going to get, and they're fully on board and just give it their best.
Yeah. Okay. I have one more personal question I have to ask. Are we ever, I know you can't talk about the future, but is there a reason why we kept hearing the name Danny Bly this season?
I kept hearing you ask about that, and I was trying to remember what happened, and I honestly can't remember. I think so. Usually, what happens with something like that, either either it's actor availability,
right? That maybe gets
screwy, but we still sort of need to address that he's in this world,
right.
Or the other thing that's often happens is things get cut from scripts,
right?
For length reasons, for time, and next thing you know, that character's not appearing. But of course, they've been mentioned because the intent was for that character to appear. So often, it's very sort of innocuous reasons. It's not like it's interesting to listen to all the pods where folks talk about it, because you folks are so great at reading the tea leaves, right? And often bring so much of your own experiences and love for the book to it. And it's like, this means that. And I'm like, actually, no, it just ended up that way because of expediency, you know? We didn't even really mean anything by it. And I think Danny sort of fell into that category. Right.
Was there any favorite fan theories you heard in the pods?
Favorite fan theories? I love hearing your partner talk about the fan theories, because you know, he sort of goes wild. The one theory that I'm trying to think. Oh, the one theory that I always find that always tickles me is aliens.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That one always tickles me. That like there's aliens.
We're going to see what people think now after the season two finale.
Yeah, I'm very, very curious about that. And I love reading all, you know, the reactions to folk. But aliens is one that I find curious. And it's funny because we don't think of the show as a sci-fi show necessarily. We think of it more as a mystery show, peeling back the layers, answering some questions, posing some new ones, hoping that that our fans and the audience continue to be engaged. Everybody from the book readers to folks who have not read the books. It's a tricky balance doing both, because you definitely want to do a little bit of fan service. You don't want to completely blow up, you know, things that are from the book. Things do have to change because it's a visual medium. For example, the one thing I heard a lot was that folks missed the relationship between Juliet and Lucas via the radio.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And going into it, we knew that we couldn't do that because it's just not fun to watch. Watching two people on a radio.
Some late night love calls.
And it works great. In the book, it works great, right? Yeah, it works fantastic because you have time for Juliet to sit and process what's going on. Here, she's like a rocket. And the last thing, you know, that she's going to do, even if we got to that point, is sit down and have like a conversation. And it also, just a peek behind a curtain, would sort of blow up, pun intended, everybody in Silo 18 living with the, is she alive, is she not alive? If you hear that she's alive, well, then that changes the trajectory of everyone. and what they think and what they're doing as far as the way that we laid it out. But primarily, yeah, we knew it wasn't going to work just cutting back and forth between two people on a radio. Not very cinematic.
And him being locked in the room.
A room. Which is we ended up giving him that much media role.
The scavenger hunt.
Yeah, which is figuring out what is really going on. Mm. Yeah.
My theory is that the talk with the algorithm down by the door is the equivalent of him being sworn in as shadow to the head of IT, and that there is a similar hidden twist.
Ah, okay.
That's my theory.
Okay. I dig it. I love it.
What was your favorite episode by somebody else other than episode 4 of this season?
Honestly, the one that blew me away when I read it was the season finale.
Okay.
Eric, who's also a director on the show,
right?
Fantastic writer, always writes from emotion. And when I first read that script and Nichols dies and that hit me, but more than anything, once you got to the end and you do the flashback reveal to Daniel and Helen, I knew it was coming and I read it. And when the Pez is revealed, I got chills.
Right.
When I first watched the episode, the first cut that came in, I knew that scene was coming. When she looks down and sees the Pez,
right,
I got chills. Like, because it's going to end up meaning so much more, I think, than people expect. And it's sort of like this totem, right, that has traveled through the ages. So that was a fantastic episode. I've actually watched it a couple of times. I just like it. Not like it, love it so much. Yeah.
So have I. I there's already lots of theories going on about that Pez dispenser. What was your favorite addition to the show that wasn't in the books?
Let me think of the favorite addition. Honestly, I think the work that we did with Knox, I'm very proud of, because we were able to take a character that dies in the book, and give him a deeper character to play off of that will continue forward. So the character work that we did on him, and we're not done with the character work on him, is probably the favorite thing of mine that we've done. Again, and then putting it in the hands of Shane, who's done such great things with that character, was just a complete joy to see.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you wish people knew about Silo?
Any final thoughts? Honestly, that when we're in a room and we're writing these episodes, the fans of the book are not far from our minds. And we have the benefit of having Hugh be such a big supporter of what we've been doing. You know, we send him scripts to read, he watches cuts. So the fan base is not very far from our minds when we've been breaking story. And I know sometimes the book readers, you know, are going to take umbrage with certain changes.
Right.
That happens with every adaptation. Mm-hmm. Books that I've loved, you know, that have been adapted. I get cranky with sometimes. But I definitely would love folks to know that the fans are not far from our mind whenever we're breaking story. And writing our scripts, honestly.
No, I feel that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel that. Yeah. Any other upcoming project you want to mention?
Not necessarily. I mean, just the fact that you know, we're everybody's working diligently to get, you know, the rest of the seasons out there.
Yeah.
As Graham said, we've been filming season 3 with an eye towards filming season 4, and I honestly think that fans of the book and fans we've picked up for the show itself, I think are going to be be very happy and entertained by what we've got in store.
Well, it's great that, well, yeah, two things. First of all, that on the writing front, you got to look at those two seasons next to each other, you know, to really tie them together well.
Right.
And also, it's great they're going to be filmed almost back to back, so we don't have to wait as long.
Oh, yeah. That was one of the things that actually made me very happy is the fact that you don't have to wait 2 years for the episodes to drop. If we can drop like once every year, awesome. You know, because we want to keep the momentum, you know, and the love that's been built around these characters on the show, and not wait too long for you to, you know, invite the bank into your living rooms again.
Right. Oh, can I ask actually one last question? This is something that came up a lot during the writer's strike is, what role do writers play on the set as filming is taking place?
Yeah. So the writer, when they're on set, honestly, they are there sort of to keep the story continuity in place. The writers know exactly where we're going. Mm-hmm. So often the visiting director, unless it's Eric, because Eric is in the writer's room, so he knows exactly where we're going.
Right.
But more importantly, the actors don't know the stuff that we're going to do in the future, right? So a writer's there to answer questions. But more importantly, if there's an issue that pops up that requires rewriting of the scene, which happens often. Either you've written a scene and you try to, as you say, you put it up on its feet, and for one reason or another, it's just not working, right? Mm-hmm. You have to like step back and figure out, well, how can I fix this? The writer on set is there to facilitate that. Or if an actor has, you know, questions about their character, it's usually the writer who can answer it as to, you know, why certain things are happening. Or if it feels a little bit bumpy and not quite working for the actor, we always are more than open to discussing how to make it a little bit smoother for them to do the job that they need to do in order to convey, you know, the character's emotions.
Right.
So it's a lot of quality control, a lot of answering questions. Mm-hmm. A lot of putting out fires. You work hand in glove with the director to make sure that the story that you're trying to tell scene by scene is executed. Because often also the director's got 1,000 things to do that the writer on set is mainly concentrating on story. You know, are we hitting those beats that are going to pay off down the road? If they're not being hit, you know, then you sort of have conversations to make sure that that does in fact happen.
Right. So your job isn't done until it's on film, basically.
Pretty much. And then for somebody like Graham, who's a showrunner, like, you know, he weighs in on everything from
editing, all that
stuff. Yeah. So yeah, it's not done once the script is turned in for sure.
No, definitely. Well, thank you so much, Sal, for your time and for so much insight and a fun conversation.
Awesome. Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
I can't let you go without a pick three. So.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
This. this is whether you're going to have buddy cop, bad guy, so that's your enemy, or bump off.
Okay.
Okay. So we've got Hank, we've got Sims, and sorry. I take that back. We've got Hank, we've got Billings, and we've got Shirley.
Okay, Hanks, Billing, Shirley. Oh, man, Hanks, Billing, Shirley. I think Hank would be a great buddy cop.
Mm-hmm.
He would be great. And what was the other choice?
It was bump off or bad guy.
Billings would be an interesting bad guy. He would be
true.
He would be in because he's so.
We saw him.
Yeah. He'd be an interesting bad guy because he's such a straight shooter. Seeing him be a bad guy would be interesting. So unfortunately, that leaves Shirley.
That leaves Shirley. All right. I'm gonna make Shirley the bad guy. I think I could see it. I could see it. You know, just a misguided for the right reasons. You know, doing the wrong thing for the right reasons. I love Billings. I want to be a buddy cop with Billings. I just think he'd be a really good partner. So yeah, sorry, Hank. Oh man.
Oh, Hank. Hank. He turned out to be a room favorite as far as character.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, he's definitely a podcast favorite.
Yeah.
Especially with Luke.
Yeah. Oh, yes. He's great. He's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, thank you again so much. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you for having me. It was fantastic chatting about the show. My pleasure.
And that's all she wrote for today. I hope you enjoyed that extra insight. And I'm going to go get ready for Luke and I to record our wrap-up and final feedback episode. You'll find that soon, coming in a few days on this feed. There is also 2 spoiler casts coming to the spoiler cast feed as well. And then you can start watching out for that Dune content that I've discussed in more detail in other episodes to start rolling in both feeds. Plus, of course, the continuation of the Hugh Howey Book Club with more machine learning stories. On the Lorehounds feed next week, there'll be an MCU 2025 preview with Jean and I. And Jean and I will be back again later that week for our Creature Commandos Season 1 one-shot. And then the following week, I'll be releasing the intro to the 2025 Oscars coverage prep series, which I've been having a lot of fun putting together. There's going to be some really interesting discussions. So hope to see you guys over there as well. And back here, of course, for more Dune and Hugh Howey. Do also check out the rest of the network. Check out my Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast. Check out Properly Howard's A Few Good Men film discussion series, Radioactive Ramblings and their coverage of Ghibli. And they just wrapped up the first Red Rising book. And of course, Never Mind the Music, where music meets psychology. You can find all those links in the show notes, plus a link to Luke's other podcast, It Could Be Said, about British and world politics and culture. And we'd also love to hear from you on the Lorehounds Discord and Blue Sky. You'll find those links in the show notes, as always, too. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, please share it with anyone else that you think would enjoy these Writer's Room insights. See you back here soon for the season wrap-up. And may the voice in your head until then sound just like Steve Zahn's Jimmy Conroy. And then they also had cats, but they weren't like our cats. These were like huge. These were huge. And they could grow up to like 400 pounds. And they were called lions. And they would train them to jump through hoops of fire.
Hey everyone, David here. The wait is over, Severance is back. The Lorehounds are teaming up with Properly Howard to bring you comprehensive coverage of Season 2. Join John, Anthony, Steve, and myself each week as we dive into this amazing show. Here's what you need to know. We've set up a dedicated feed for our Severance coverage. To join us, just search for Severance Lorehounds in your podcast player, or click the feed link in our link tree. You'll find that in the show notes below. If you're already a Patreon or Supercast subscriber, don't worry. You'll get the ad-free versions automatically in your regular feed. Plus, exclusive access to our upcoming bonus episodes that we'll be announcing soon. The early reviews are incredible. Apple's marketing push is huge, and we cannot wait to explore this season with you. And unlike the music dance experience, you don't need Mr. Milchick's permission to join us. Don't forget, you can find the feed link in our link tree in the show notes, or just search Severance Lorehounds wherever you get your podcasts. Join us for what's shaping up to be an incredible season.
And remember, your Audi will thank your innie for subscribing.